Welcome, good afternoon. We're going to call the Tax Committee to order, and it's a joint committee members of the Full Tax Committee and the Property Tax Division. Am I right?
Yes.
Yes, and for some reason, everybody's not here. Representative Dabney is going to chair when he gets here, but we're going to get started so we can get all four bills done in 90 minutes. So with that, we're going to go to Representative Ward, and Representative Anzels will move Representative Ward's bill. Is that right? We need a number. Do you guys know the number? I don't have glasses on. Representative Anzels moves Representative Ward's bill, House File 529, for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill. Thank you, Representative Anzels. Representative Ward, welcome.
Madam Chair, thank you, members. Representative Anzel, thank you for doing that as well. My husband was recruited for at 3M a long time ago, close to 40 years ago, as a scientist coming out of the University of Washington with a PhD doing optical scanning with lasers to identify cancer cells. Over time, he moved to different buildings, different jobs, and different projects. And, you know, the world has changed a lot in those 40 years. When we came to 3M, and I, you know, 3M, we toured the facilities, and the lab buildings then were probably very much like what your high school or maybe your college lab chemistry labs were like. It was clean, it was safe, but it was certainly not really attractive. It was, and those are the same two buildings that they're doing primary research in. They've outlived their useful life, and this bill addresses a fairly complex request. So I'm going to let others introduce the details to you. This is Mr. Gergesdahl, and he will explain part of this to you.
Good afternoon, sir. Thank you. Representative Ward, do I understand that you have a author's amendment for your bill?
Yes, that will be. You want that now?
If we could, please, to get it in the order that you would, as the author, prefer.
Sure, thank you.
So moved.
Representative Anzels, thank you for moving the author's amendment.
Thank you.
Any discussion to the amendment? This is an amendment to get the bill in the form the author prefers. Given no discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Ward, as amended. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Henry Gergesdahl. I'm Vice President of Tax and Real Estate at 3M Company. Joining me today are Bill Shea, Manager of our Real Estate Department, and Jim Casterly, 3M's outside counsel and advising on this matter. On behalf of the company, I want to thank you for your time and consideration of this proposal. 3M continues to be recognized as one of the most innovative companies in the world. In fact, Booz & Company recently ranked 3M as the third most innovative company behind Google and Apple. Our innovation occurs as a result of continuous and focused investment in research and development. 3M maintains research facilities across the globe, with the hub of those research activities at our headquarters in Maplewood. 3M is committed to increase its spending on R&D by approximately 6% of sales. And to put some perspective in that, our sales for 2012 were $30 billion. So then that equates to almost $1.8 billion of R&D spend. As part of that commitment, 3M is considering the construction of a new state-of-the-art research facility on its Maplewood campus. This new facility would replace two existing laboratories that have reached the end of their life. In conjunction with this potential investment, we have been working cooperatively with the City of Maplewood to seek legislation that would establish a long-term TIF district for the research facility and surrounding area. This legislation would eliminate the increase in property taxes attributable to the new lab. The modest size of the annual increase in property taxes makes it incumbent to establish a long-term TIF district in order to create a meaningful incentive for the company to fill the facility in this state. We are also seeking forgiveness of the statewide business property tax to further enhance the incentive. We need to upgrade our laboratory facilities to retain and attract scientists and technical employees that will serve the company in the coming years. We are competing for the brightest and the best and want the Maplewood campus to reflect an attractive and state-of-the-art facility and campus. The TIF will help make that a possibility. I would like to quickly go through some general facts relating to the proposed facility, so if you could look at the screen. The proposed research facility would be 412,000 square feet at a cost of approximately $150 million. It would replace two of the buildings on campus, which are laboratories that were built over 50 years ago. Once completed, the new facility would house approximately 700 current 3M scientific, technical, and support staff. It will take 2 years to complete. As background, the current assessed value of the entire 3M campus is $210 million, and we paid about $8.5 million of property tax in 2012. This is an overview of the 3M campus. The total campus is over 437 acres and contains 7.1 million square feet of office and lab buildings. As indicated, the proposed research facility would be located in the northwest corner of the campus, the area cited there in yellow. Also, you can see buildings 207 and 209 highlighted. Those are the ones that are circled. These are the two labs that will be replaced. The current plan would be to demolish these buildings once we complete construction of the new facility in 2016. Finally, this is a site plan for building 280, which will be the new research facility if approved. The building complex immediately to the east of the proposed research facility currently is home to the company's healthcare businesses and numerous labs. We are anticipating that the new research facility would be connected to these buildings by a skyway, which I think you can see in this diagram. This will allow for greater collaboration between our scientific community, which is key to 3M innovation. Again, I want to thank the committee for your consideration of this important legislation related to the company's proposed research investment.
Thank you, sir. Representative Ward, do you have other testifiers?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I do. This is Charles Wall.
Mr. Wall, while you're coming up, members, we do now have a quorum for both committees, so I'd like to formally convene the Committee on Taxes and the Property and Local Tax Division. Thank you. Mr. Wall, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Chuck Wall.
My apologies, sir.
No problem. I'm the Assistant City Manager in Maplewood and here to talk a little bit about the bill and really the complexities of the bill and how this impacts the city of Maplewood in our attempt to support this project. Council is extremely supportive of this. Obviously, when we can talk retaining 700 employees, new facilities, and an investment in the campus. 3M, for your information, pays about 12% of the property taxes in the city of Maplewood. So obviously very important to us. But our specific issue in this particular bill that's in front of you is a couple of provisions. One, the creation of what's called a single district, how that impacts us with TIF legislation, not even getting into the specifics, but for a potentially 25-year period, locking the tax base for 12% of our community is certainly not something that we can do to our taxpayers. And certainly that's one of the provisions. The second provision is the impact of Maplewood on fiscal disparities. We are a fairly sizable contributor to fiscal disparities, and so we are not asking for that to change. But in the specifics of the bill, when we're talking about a regional facility, what Maplewood needs to do as part of this project is we are needing to construct a fire station in this area. We're with our partners at 3M, they're looking to donate property immediately north of this property, right off 3M Lake, immediately north of there, we need to build a fire station. And so when you take the issues of trying to provide support for 3M for this project, having to contribute fiscal disparities means that when you're talking about 12% of our tax base, that amount then goes back to our Maplewood taxpayers. In addition, we have to build and pay for a fire station. Now, I know that in your information, typically fire stations are not eligible for tax increment financing funds. In this particular legislature, if we don't have that provision and we have to pay the fiscal disparities portion of this bill, in effect, Maplewood taxpayers are hit with double jeopardy. we have to pay both the fiscal disparities in order to get that money to 3M, and we have to build a fire station. And so the numbers are fairly substantial and very, very difficult for our city council to say, well, let's go to the taxpayers and hit them twice for a particular project. So we're very supportive of this. We ask for your consideration on this. We can talk about the specifics, the single district, the fiscal disparities. We think we have a very good partnership with 3M. We think this is a scenario. In addition, if those of you don't know, I come from an engineering background. When we talk in construction, $150 million worth of improvements, that's 1,500 construction jobs that are ready to go. It's an investment that we're ready to do. And more importantly for Maplewood, we just are very excited about 3M's commitment to this campus, something that they're looking for, a long-range investment in our area and our campus, our city and our state. And so we're very supportive of that. And Mr. Chair, I'm certainly available to answer any questions.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chair, I just want to add one other thing. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I think you've received a copy of the letter from the Chamber, Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. St. Paul, thank you. There's a copy in your packets, I believe, and you all should have received it on email as well. Is that not there?
Representative Ward, Ms. Jensen informs me that members received it by email.
Okay. So
this is not members a reason to take out your phones.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. I will just say then, Mr. Chair, if it's all right, the Chamber of Commerce endorses this, the full extent of it. They are very concerned and interested in keeping 3M here in Minnesota. It contributes so greatly to all of the aspects of Minnesota life that we care about.
Thank you, Representative Ward. Do you have any other testifiers? All right. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify regarding House File 529? Seeing none, any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Ward, can you tell me why there's a provision in here for a city building?
Mr. All,
I think you're
wanted back at the table.
He can answer that more succinctly than I can.
Mr. All, do you need the question rephrased for you?
No, I don't, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative, again, I think it goes back to the provision that as part of the project, we need to construct a fire station. It provides service certainly not just to 3M, but we intend to provide both our fire and, more importantly, emergency medical services for them. We've had to close two fire stations in Maplewood simply because of the age of them and our ability to provide what we have is a hybrid type of fire service. So we need to build a new station down in the southern part of Maplewood, and 3M has come forward and offered to provide property just north of this facility. So as part of that, our council has said, let's see if we can't work this out and find a funding source. Otherwise, our taxpayers have to pay, A, for the fire station, and B, also the fiscal disparities part of that. So if we can provide fiscal disparities to help pay for our fire station, we're able to make that work.
Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. All, can you tell me what happened to the property of the two fire stations that you closed down?
Mr. All.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at this point in time, we've done nothing. The buildings are sitting vacant at this point in time, and certainly we've been unable to do anything with those properties until we're able to find a place to build a fire station and make this project work.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Mr. All, so there's no plans at the moment to actually sell that land and maybe use the proceeds from that to build the fire hall on the new property at all? Or?
Mayor All.
Mr. Chair, Representative, absolutely that is part of the plan. As part of our long-range plan in order to shift from, not getting too technical, but shift from a paid-per-call type of system to a hybrid where we have to have part-time and full-time individuals and then house them on a 24/7 basis. So we have to build sleeping quarters and do that. And so those stations aren't prepared to do that. So, yes, that is part of the plan and would help us pay about one-third the cost of the fire station. So we would not use all of the TIF to pay for our fire station, but approximately two-thirds.
Representative Anderson.
Mr. Chair, can we ask Mr. Michaels, how do we typically do this for TIF districts? What has this happened in the past? I don't recall us ever doing TIF districts for city buildings.
Mr. Michael.
Mr. Chair, Representative Anderson, I cannot think of another instance where the legislature has enacted a special law that authorizes the use of tax increment to build a municipal building for, you know, general municipal services. The prohibition that's in the law now was enacted back in 1982 and after the enactment of the Tax Increment Act in 1979, which did not have this prohibition. My recollection is that there were a handful of cities, like maybe three or four, that in fact used tax increment to build various municipal buildings, and the legislature in 1982, I think largely at the instigation then of Senator Marv Hansen in the Senate, felt that that was an inappropriate way to use tax increment because it essentially had the county and school district taxpayers contributing to a cost that typically should be paid only by the city taxpayers.
Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I came late, so Representative Ward, can you tell me what are the services that 3M currently contracts with the city of St. Paul that would no longer be contracted with if Maplewood built a fire station there? And how would this impact me in St. Paul?
Representative Ward, Mayor Aul.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Lesh, I'm going to defer to Mayor Aul because he has the details of that.
Mayor Aul?
Mr. Chair, again, Assistant City Manager and Representative. Currently, the City of St. Paul and 3M have had an agreement for fire services, and over the years, that has started to evolve. The reason being is that when 3M started construction of their campus, Maplewood was just a growing community, and we had volunteer fire department at that point in time. Now that our fire department in the city has grown, that payment and the amount has decreased over the years. I'm not sure about the exact amount of the payment, but that change in services is now being provided or will be a provision of providing service from the city of Maplewood as we move forward with this discussion.
So,
Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Mayor Aul, so if I supported this bill, would I be supporting taking away service opportunities for my city?
Sir, did I demote you to mayor from, help me with your title so we can at least get it right once.
Mr. Chair, thank you. My title is Assistant City Manager. I'm certainly not the mayor.
My apologies,
no
sir.
No problem. Thank you. Thank you. Representative, I believe that discussion at this point in time is really not tied to this particular bill. That discussion has been going on for a number of years. It has not occurred at this point in time. The switch has not occurred, but those discussions are underway and have been going on for a number of years. I don't know the specific finality of that and where the direction is going, but that's the intent of the direction of this. Whether this bill gets approved or not, I believe that change would have been made. That's Maplewood's position anyway.
Okay.
Representative Lesh?
Chair, I'm guessing, and Maplewood probably couldn't do it without a new fire station there, maybe. Regardless, it's a caveat or contingency about which I was not aware when the bill was presented to me. So I'd just like to get more information about it. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Davids.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And to Mr. Aul, since we're shifting money from the school district and the county to the city, has the school district and the county, in effect, they're subsidizing the city, have they signed off on this? Do they support this?
Mr. Aul.
Mr. Chair, Representative, at this point in time, because of the preliminary nature of this and the discussions, those discussions have not occurred. We have not processed a TIF hearing. We have not sent notice to either the school district or the county regarding the tax issues on this.
Thank you,
Representative Davids.
Mr. All, you may wish to visit with them. Also, if Mr. Michael could describe the changes in fiscal disparities if this bill were to become law, how are we using fiscal disparities to work with this?
Mr. Michael, can you help us with that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davids, this bill does not change the fiscal disparities treatment under tax increment at all. I think the proponents of the bill are arguing that the effects of fiscal disparities are sort of what have compelled them to come to the legislature and request this.
Okay, thank
Representative
you.
Davids?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, sir. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just want to kind of mention thank you, Representative Ward, for bringing this forward. And in the crowd we have Representative Fisher, and then myself. We all three of us represent Maplewood, and it's been interesting for me as a legislator during my time. I've represented Maplewood, you know, and I continue to even after redistricting. But it's Maplewood pays quite a bit in, as was mentioned, into fiscal disparities, and then at the same time I represent a city right next door of North St. Paul, which luckily gets some LGA. So it's always that mixture. So you go to one city council and they're mad at the other for this and that, and then the other one's mad at that for, you know, for they get a different scenario. But it's this having 3M in East Metro is, you know, and the state, we've really been blessed to have them. And they're clearly an asset. And one of the things that doesn't often come out to it, and it comes up with the kind of the questions about, you know, the school districts. And I really think they will, when they go to them and talk to them, that they'll be able to get support. Is a lot of the scientists that are currently at 3M, they're really encouraged to go out into the community and to volunteer in the local schools. So we've really been blessed in the state and the East Metro to have those the skills and the talent that comes out into our schools and does a lot of good things. And so I'm glad, I hope we can look at this and kind of consider to think outside the box. And, you know, if it works, it works, and hopefully it does. But thank you for that. And, you know, a couple weeks ago we had a presentation for TIF that we also have for Oakdale, and it's related to 3M and improving that whole East Metro and making it better and hopefully making 3M successful in the East Metro and the state of Minnesota. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. Seeing no further questions, Representative Ward, any closing comments?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of things. The employees from 3M worldwide are aging just like the rest of us. Approximately a third of them, oh, not you, approximately a third of them will be retiring in the next 5 years. Many of those are the scientists that are in that facility. And if any of you have taken children to college campuses recently, you know what their facilities look like and what these young graduates are used to. And they're going to want to see a state-of-the-art laboratory to be working in. I mentioned what my husband was doing originally when he was hired. We don't even typically think of 3M doing cancer cell research, but they need to have the state-of-the-art kind of facility to do that. I would encourage you to ask any more questions, see any of us if you still need to, and please support this bill. One last thing, since this is the first time that I have presented to either one of these committees, I brought treats.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
That's pretty good.
That's excellent. I don't know, Representative, but it is a deep-seated tradition in this committee, isn't it?
Great idea.
All right. Thank you very much, Representative Ward. Chair Lincheski.
Chair Daphne.
Representative Lilly.
Just a quick comment. I'm raising a chemist. He's going to be in the PhD program at the U. I just want to mention that it's good to have a fire station close to scientists.
Thank you, Representative Lilly. You want to talk about what happened to the basement when he was younger? No. All right. What happens in Maplewood stays in Maplewood. Chair Lincheski, welcome to your committee, ma'am.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you hear well? I had a hard time hearing some of the folks with 3M on this mic.
Perhaps pages can help.
I don't know. Just
I don't know.
Mr. Chair, if it's okay, are we going to hear House Bill 668 first?
That's what the agenda reflects.
Okay, and these folks are here for 208, but I think House Bill 668 will take just a second.
Okay.
It's actually a provision in the next bill as well.
All right.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If I may, I'd like to move House Bill 668 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you. So moved.
And I'd like to move, if I
may. Oh, Madam Chair, I'm going to ask you, do I need to ask you to reverse that? Do we need to make a motion on Representative Ward's bill since we amended it?
I withdraw my motion.
Thank you. The chair moves that House File 529, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill. My apologies, Chair Lincheski. Chair Lincheski moves that House File 668 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd also like to move the A1 amendment.
All right.
In the form I would like it.
All right. Members, Chair Lincheski has moved the A1 amendment. It's an author's amendment to get the bill in the form that she prefers. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed. Motion prevails. Representative Lincheski, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, what this bill is, members, is a bill that attempts to address a problem that a lot of the TIF districts in the state of Minnesota, so it's not city specific, are being affected by as a result of the repeal of the homestead credit and the introduction of the new market value homestead exclusion. So one of the things that's going on there is the valuation of property is making it a little more difficult for tax increment finance districts, a handful around the state. And I think that this became clear to me with a piece of the next bill, the McGuff proposal. And thinking about it, it seemed to me that there would be other cities and other legislators who would carry bills to address the same problem. And so what this bill does it qualifies TIF districts to subtract the amount of the homestead market value exclusion from the original net tax capacity of the district. And I think if it's all right, Mr. Chair, if Mr. Michael can just expand on this a little bit, looking now, the revenue estimate predicts about 60 TIF districts will be affected by this. So other than that, Mr. Chair, I don't have any testifiers. I think this is something for the committee to consider for the omnibus tax bill. Should we have sort of a broad statewide approach to similar TIF districts across the state? So with
Thank
that,
you.
I think Mr. Michael's best to explain further.
Mr. Michael, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the chair did a good job of explaining essentially what the bill does. And that says that if you have a tax increment district that received as part of its increment at least $10,000 in homestead market value credit, and as a result of the enactment of the exclusion, your captured tax capacity went down by at least 1.75%, then you qualify to essentially subtract the reduction in tax capacity that results from enactment of the market value homestead exclusion from your original value. And when you think about the mechanics of TIF, we've got two values. You've got the original tax capacity, which you certify at the time the district is created, and then the increase that occurs from the development is captured, and the taxes paid by that captured tax capacity is what generates the increment to pay for the district's costs. When the market value exclusion got enacted, the amount of captured value went down. The original value generally didn't change much because most of the original value did not consist of homes before that were still getting it. So all this does is says that the city has the election for up to 2 years to decide to subtract that tax capacity reduction from original, and that will increase the captured value and increase increment that will allow them to pay for their costs.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Any questions from members? Anyone in the audience wishing to testify regarding House File 668? Chair Lincheski, any last comment? With that, the chair renews. Chair Lincheski removes her motion that House File 668, as amended, be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Representative Lincheski. House File 208.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move House File 208 for possible inclusion in the omnibus tax bill.
Thank you. Please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this, of course, is a big stretch for me personally, as many of you know. But in the spirit of compromise, I'm carrying House File 208. This bill is got a lot of support for lots of different parts of the bill bipartisanly over many years. And it's one of the unsolved pieces in the tax committee. And after a lot of work with a lot of people, many of whom are here for many, many months, I've put my best foot forward to try to do something that is a approach that the governor, the House and Senate, minority and majority can get around. And so, Mr. Chair, House File 208 is the subject here, if you look down your revenue estimate, that's called the Bloomington South Loop Development Authority Bill. And it's difficult for me to call it that because it's this part of my city has always been called Airport South. But my city has changed and renamed and rebranded this area, so I'm trying to use the vernacular, which is called Bloomington South Loop. So, members, this bill really does three big development pieces, jobs, buildings, pieces in the city of Bloomington. For folks who have been to the city of Bloomington, it's in the area that the Mall of America sits, but it is not just a Mall of America bill. It is an area between Highway 77, Cedar, and the eastern edge of Bloomington, which is a national urban wildlife refuge. So the three big pieces, Mr. Chair, members, in this bill are enhancements to facilitate the Mall of America expanding in their attempts to have a large second expansion to the Mall of America. The McGuff properties, folks often call it Bloomington Central Station, and to get that development underway. And then the third piece is the amenities for the public piece, the parks piece, the way to think about them. And that is it's a bill that we've called here and been heard many times in bonding as the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. And this is a bridge that connects two counties and multiple cities that has regional impacts and indeed was a old state highway that was given to Bloomington against Bloomington's wishes and has become something that's very dear to the people of many suburbs around there and the biking community and hiking community of the metro. But Bloomington is the owner and has been tasked with solving this problem, and the legislature has passed funding for it a few other times in the bonding bill, but now that its time has gone on, it's become more expensive and it needs to be restored. So that's called the Old Cedar Avenue Bridge. So these three pieces create a large redevelopment project in the city of Bloomington that would put lots of folks to work, and yes, they come with subsidy, and that's why we're here. And you know, Mr. Chair, personally, I always don't like it when authors and testifiers try to hide the fact that there are public subsidies in these developments, but there always are. In fact, the one we just heard, we all know in this committee that tax increment finance or fiscal disparities, these are subsidies. So that's part of the reason we're here. And so there are these three big chunks. Just looking at the revenue estimate, at the House research summary, Mr. Chair and members, I'll just hit a few of the things and then ask my testifiers to address a few things a little further. Fiscal disparities is the way that I am proposing that the Mall Phase 2 gets done. Unlike in the past when it's been proposed, it is not a new tax on the pool. It is a removal by the mall's payment, their planned payments into fiscal disparities for the duration to get Phase 2 done. So many of you know the largest contributor in the state of Minnesota for fiscal disparities is and always has been the city of Bloomington. And this would allow one business in our city to not pay their fiscal disparities component. I think most of the folks have watched the hearings here and know that generally speaking, the first phase of the mall was financed by the people of Bloomington and Hennepin County, and the tax receipts go to the state. And so it's my opinion that it's only fair that if folks would like to advance the next phase, then we're going to need to have a little broader base. Indeed, the governor in his veto letter mentioned this, that he supported another way other than a tax increment finance district to get this phase done. And so that's the attempt on how to, at its core, to finance the mall. There is some additional 3 years of TIF moving portions of Mall 1's property onto a Mall 2 redraw line. And so there's a few years of TIF going on there. There's the bonding for the bridge. That's been introduced in a separate bill so that this bill won't have to go to bonding and is going to be heard separately by Chair Hausman. The Bloomington Central Station McGough project has a number of provisions as it relates to TIF. It's extending the five-year rule and giving them an eight-year extension on the duration of their TIF district. There's also a lodging tax base change. This committee will remember that there were changes that were passed in the 2011 tax bill that changed the state sales tax on lodging, and this was related to the Expedia and Orbitz and online sales, and this would allow cities that collect those taxes to collect the local lodging tax this way in the city of Bloomington as well. And I think I've covered kind of the big chunks. There's definitely more, but I'll leave it at that so you can see why this is sort of a big bill with a lot of moving parts. And Mr. Chair, if I may, I think my city would like to kind of kick it off, and then we have a testifiers in each of the areas.
Let me, if I may, Chair Lincheski, do two things. One, members are now receiving the property tax fiscal note that had not been included in packets. If folks could make sure that the author gets that, please. And then secondly, Representative Davids, I think, wanted to discuss bike trails, something that Lanesboro and Bloomington have deeply in common.
I have an amendment.
You have an amendment?
Yeah. No. If I could, before we get into the
Representative Davids
testimony, I hope members of this committee, and I know they are, pay very, very close attention. This is a very, very good bill, and I'm very happy that Chair Lincheski is carrying this bill. This is, just so we make no mistake about it, this will be the largest jobs bill of the session if this passes and becomes law. So I'm glad to be on the bill. I'm glad you're carrying it, and I think we're going to do some good things here.
Representative Davids, was this provision included in the smoking hot tax bill of 2012?
It was in the smoking hot tax bill, but as Chair Lincheski described, there are some changes in the actual financing. You're using fiscal disparities instead of TIF for Bloomington and some different things, which I am in full support of.
Excellent. With that, Representative Lincheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Davids. I appreciate those comments, and I really appreciate them coming from you. I know we've had a struggle on this issue sometimes, and so I really do appreciate that. Mr. Chair, I'm sorry it wasn't included, and I have seen it, and members, you can see the revenue estimate here, and it walks through, you know, what the effect is of pulling that payment that the mall would make into the fiscal disparities pool out of the pool. Okay, so that's kind of the core of what's going on, but if we want to get into the detail of that, I think it's better that Mr. Michael walks through exactly how the revenue estimate works.
All right. Mr. Michael, if you would, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, essentially what the bill does, as the chair said, rather than having these two tax increment districts contribute to the fiscal disparities pool, instead the fiscal disparities tax that captured value for those two districts will pay is tax increment rather than going into the fiscal disparities pool to be redistributed across all the taxing districts in the metropolitan area. As a result of that, in preparing the revenue estimate, the Department of Revenue has assumed, as they generally do, that the levying behavior of the local governments will not change, so they will continue to impose their same levies. The result of that being spread on a smaller tax base causes taxes in the metropolitan area to go up a little bit as a result of that, and the net result is that the department is projecting that two things happen as a result. One is that more property tax refunds will be paid to homeowners, and that individuals and businesses will end up deducting more property taxes because their property taxes will be slightly higher, and that shows up as a cost or as a reduction in or an increase in property tax payment and a reduction in income tax and corporate tax collections. If you recall from the bill that was here last year, there was not a similar effect that showed up, and that's because with tax increment, which has a very similar kind of effect, because the extension period was outside of the forecast window, those numbers similar to this would have also occurred, but they were outside the forecast window, so they would not show up on the revenue estimate.
Thank you, Mr. Michael. Representative Lincheski, to your testifiers.
Yes, please.
Sir, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and representatives, members of the committee, and Representative Lucheski for authoring this bill. Today I'll just go through this packet very quickly. That looks like this. You should have received it. That's a number of slides that's titled 2013 Minnesota Legislature, House File 208 on the cover. On the first slide, we go into a little bit about what Bloomington's South Loop area is geographically. As Representative Lucheski stated, it's the eastern portion of Bloomington, roughly equidistant from St. Paul and Minneapolis, and it is the south end of the Hiawatha line, including four light rail stations that exist there, and it will be the north end of the Cedar BRT, or Red Line, when that line is operational later this year. And our goal here in South Loop is to take this area from a standard suburban-style development that would be projected without subsidy and make it into a more walkable urban place, leveraging the existing investments that are there, namely primarily in transit. Moving on to the next sheet, we talk a little bit about the Old Cedar Bridge. There's a little history there that I won't go into. Representative Lucheski talked about its history a little bit. Bloomington is the current owner of the bridge and is tasked with solving the challenge of getting the thing constructed. So we have a construction estimate of up to $10 million, and we have identified some funding. The state is part of that, currently the city of Bloomington, some federal money, and some of the other stakeholders, but there is still a funding gap in order to get the project done. So as one of the three pieces of this bill, it's critical to have this project completed also. Moving to the next page, this puts the Old Cedar Bridge in the context of the state trail system that runs along the river valley. And as you can see, it's part of that system, and it links to the system. The bridge is closed today. Nobody can cross it. It's unsafe. The deck is completely rusted, and the wooden planks that used to be the surface have been taken out or are just simply gone. And so it's in need of repair as it sits today. Moving on to the Mall of America, we'll talk a little bit about what the mall does for the state and with respect to tourism. I know that's a big push nationally and from state senators. The mall gets about 40 million or over 40 million visitors per year, and roughly 15 million of those visits are from outside of Minnesota. They do sampling at the Mall of America to come up with these numbers. And through its history, you've had about 250 million out-of-state visits since the mall opened in 1992. There are 34 countries that have tour packages that include the Mall of America, so this is bringing in a lot of money and people from a lot of different areas of the United States and the world. It certainly dwarfs the other tourist attractions that the state has by, if you graph the 40 million visitors with the top 10 attractions in Minnesota, the Mall of America by far sees vastly more than them. So the development, existing development is 4.2 million square feet and change. Phase two would be roughly a doubling of that, up to 5.6 million square feet. We are working on those subsequent phases as we speak. Radisson Blu is opening in a month. IKEA was another part of a subsequent phase, and we're looking at building blocks onto the mall on the north side. So moving into the IKEA lot in subphases, very big subphases, as we move forward with the project, and this bill will certainly make that a lot easier. Without additional revenue, you'll see typical suburban big box development on that site. We want to leverage the existing public investments that are out there in South Loop and at the Mall of America. And as a side note, in particular, the transit station at the Mall of America, which currently does not have a sign outside, is the busiest transit hub in the state. It has more transit users than any other hub in the state. So moving on to the next slide, just to note that the state and the region have been the major benefactors from the mall since its opening in 92. Bloomington took a big risk on the front end. As it was previously mentioned, Bloomington is the biggest fiscal disparities contributor to right now. And the mall has paid about $1.2 billion in state and local taxes and about $133 million to date in fiscal disparities. And the bill contemplates leaving Mall 1 as it was originally planned to go back in and become part of the tax base in 2016 as part of the original TIF plan. The next slide shows a little bit about Bloomington Central Station, which is the third leg of this stool. No reference to Senator, or excuse me, Commissioner Franz's revenue proposal. Background on the project: it's a 50-acre site. It's transit-oriented development to its core. It contains the Health Partners headquarters, and currently the first phase of the redevelopment, or the first residential phase anyway, is 263 units that are LEED certified. It has one light rail station on site and two that are adjacent. It also has a Route 54 coming from St. Paul. That's a highly used transit route for Metro Transit. The development plan includes office, residential, and hotel, and it will really be a high-density transit-oriented mixed-use development in the end. The next slide shows what Representative Lincheski talked about as part of what House File 668 attempts to fix and the rest of House File 208 attempts to fix. If you look in the middle of that slide, you can see the TIF revenues in 2008 for the project at $845,000, and then in 2013 we're projecting $485,000. So that these are things that are out of the developer's control that have, you know, almost cut the TIF revenue in half on this project. And what we're trying to do with some of these changes is to get that TIF revenue back up so that we can pay for the public improvements that make this project happen. And primarily what we're talking about there is the structured parking that the site needs to be a mixed use and dense development. And with that, I'd be happy to take any questions.
I think we'd rather go through the test fires and then take questions after we've completed that. Representative Nelson, I'm sorry.
I don't think he identified himself when he started out. He didn't give his name, so.
I was too busy eating chocolate, I assume. Sir, if you would, please.
I apologize, Mr. Chair and representatives. I'm Shane Rudlang with the Bloomington Port Authority.
Thank you very much. Sir, if you would please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
I will, sir. My name is Chuck Chos. My last name is spelled K-J-O-S. And Mr. Chairman, representatives, Representative Lincheski, thank you very much for letting me speak to you. I'm especially grateful for Representative Lincheski for her work for the bridge twice. She has organized successful rallies for the bridge that twice were attended by different governors. Tim Pawlenty attended the first one, and Mark Dayton attended the second one. And a lot of people came to the rallies. Both were great successes. So thank you so much for what you've done and for letting me speak today. Okay. I walked the old Cedar Avenue Bridge several times a week in the 3 years before it closed. I'm also in a group of user and governmental groups working to get the bridge back. I'm delighted to say I know of no group organized against fixing the bridge. I saw three broad groups of users of the bridge. The largest group were local citizens, individuals, kids, couples, and families just out for a walk and a bike ride in a very nice, easy-to-get-to place. Thank you. This included people in wheelchairs and people with walkers because the bridge is handicap friendly. People could and did wheel and shuffle from the parking lot right onto the bridge. No barriers, no stairs. And almost everyone stopped on the bridge to look out over Long Meadow Lake. They loved it. These local users aren't organized advocates for the bridge, even though they sure used it. And I hope the city of Bloomington joins in to help fix it for them. The other two groups are from a wider area. Before the bridge closed, it was a destination for one, serious hikers and trail bikers, and two, nature lovers. For the focus trail users, the bridge was a draw, the node that connected trails north and south of the Minnesota River, and demand for biking and hiking trails has grown and become more organized since the 2002 bridge closure. Minnesota DNR's Parks and Trails, local governments, and citizen trail groups are working diligently for trail expansion. It's increasingly illogical for the closed bridge to break the connection between trails north and south of the river. The bridge was also a draw for nature lovers, statewide and beyond. This group included educators, photographers, and birders. The bridge crosses Long Meadow Lake, and I believe Long Meadow Lake is the most important water bird marsh in the refuge. It's featured in Minnesota Audubon's tourist guide, Minnesota River Valley Birding Trail, and it's also featured in an online guide to Minnesota's handicapped accessible birding areas. The bridge was cited frequently in the Minnesota Ornithologists Union email bird alert. It may have been the most cited spot in the state. I wasn't keeping track then, but there were multiple sightings every week. Every interesting bird anywhere in central Minnesota seems to turn up on Longmeadow Lake, and people came to the bridge to look. In my opinion, the old Cedar Avenue Bridge is the best viewing spot on the best water bird marsh in the Twin Cities counties and beyond. One example. Last year, a white-faced ibis swooped onto Longmeadow Lake. Sharp-eyed birders spotted it. The Minnesota Ornithologist Union zapped its alert. Word spread like wildfire, and people swept in. They couldn't view the ibis from the bridge, but they looked from where they could. The white-faced ibis is a splashy gee-whiz bird. It's as big as a mallard, with shining, dark, iridescent copper-green feathers and striking white where its long, curved bill meets its face. Three times my wife and I went to the see that bird, and each time it was like a presidential press conference. There was a forest of tripods with fancy scopes and pricey long-lens cameras. People were looking and clicking pictures like crazy. I think that ibis is the most photographed bird in Minnesota. So now this bridge, this jewel in a national wildlife refuge, is closed. It serves no public good. It's useless. The refuge might take the bridge, but it can't take it crumbling. If the bridge collapses or is raised, it will cost a lot of money for cleanup and will leave nothing of value when the cleanup is done. I wholeheartedly support fixing the bridge, and I wish you success in getting the bridge back to be the wonderful thing it was. Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate your taking the time today. Representative Lincheski, your next testifier, please.
Yes, please. Mr. Higgins here from the Mall of America.
Mr. Higgins, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Kurt Hagen. I'm Vice President of Development for 555 at the Mall of America. Back in 1985, Mall of America proposed an unprecedented development for Minnesota, which has now become the most visited attraction in North America, called Mall of America. In exchange for an investment in public infrastructure, 555 promised a $625 million development that would create 10,000 jobs, bring in millions of tourists from all over the world, generate millions, tens of millions in new tax revenues to the city, the state, and the region. Many thought the idea was crazy, certainly risky, but Bloomington Mayor Jim Lindau, city leaders, Governor Rudy Perpich, and the 1986 legislature believed and provided a public funding source for Mall of America to make Mall of America a reality. Today, with over 20 years of history behind it, we can now say that Mall of America has met or exceeded every single one of the projections it made. Today, Mall of America attracts 42 million annual visitors and has an annual impact to our state of over $3 billion. Today, Mall of America is one of the state's largest taxpayers. It generates more than has generated more than $1.2 billion in total taxes since its inception. It now generates over $80 million in tax revenue each year on-site alone. That does not count off-site taxes generated by the tourists coming to the state, staying in hotels, renting cars, dining out, and seeing other state attractions. Mall of America has created 7,000 construction jobs during the peak of the 1990 recession and has created over 13,000 permanent jobs for the state. Currently, there are nearly $200 million worth of new construction projects going on at Mall of America, including the $140 million Radisson Blue that Shane mentioned that will open in 3 weeks on March 15th. We're always building something new, and we always will. That's why people keep coming back. Today, Mall of America, or tourists come from Mall of America, that they half of our sales are generated or to these tourists, meaning half of the sales tax generated in the state of Minnesota come from tourists. These same tourists spend over $2 billion annually outside of Mall of America in the state of Minnesota. Currently, we have over 70 different tour packages with over 30 different countries. and we're consistently named one of the best family attractions in the country. We have a global brand recognition that's greater than GE. With a 20-year track history, Mall of America has paid back its initial public investment many times over in the form of new tax revenues, new jobs, and tourism generated to our state. Mall of America captures out-of-state tourist dollars and deposits these monies into state, regional, and local infrastructure, bridges, roads, and schools. Our city and state decision makers probably never imagined just how big of an economic impact Mall of America would have on the state when they took a chance on a very big idea and approved funding back in 1986 to provide for the initial public infrastructure. Now this committee has essentially the same opportunity in front of it, except this time with 20 years of track history to look back on. We've provided some handouts that should have gone around that shows kind of the tax history, tourism facts, mall facts to show you the economic engine that this project has been to the state. Mall of America is a proven public-private success story. We now have the opportunity to build on this success and grow Mall of America, creating thousands of additional jobs, bringing millions more tourists to Minnesota, and generating tens of millions more in additional taxes each year to benefit the state and the region. We've done this once before with great results, and with your support, we can do this again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hagen. Sir, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mark Fable with McGough Development, representing Bloomington Central Station. First of all, thank you for hearing this bill, and thank Representative Lencheski and the House staff for all the work they've put into this bill to date. Since Representative Lencheski described the bill and the city of Bloomington described some of the financial challenges that Bloomington Central Station has experienced, I thought I would really just focus quickly on the project itself and keep the hearing moving forward.
Thank you, sir.
Bloomington Central Station is a high-density, mixed-use, transit-oriented development of an existing suburban campus. So I'll be speaking to the black slides that you have in front of you as well. The project includes approximately 1,000 units of residential condominiums or apartments, a 300-room hotel, 50,000 square feet of retail, and about 2 million square feet of additional future corporate office, all centered around a central park. If you turn to the second page, spatially it orients you within the South Loop District. On the left-hand side of the page, you'll see the Mall of America and the land slated for the Phase 2 expansion of the mall. And to the right-hand side, or the east side of the South Loop District, is the site plan oriented for Bloomington Central Station. The red line traveling through the South Loop District is the Hiawatha line that does bisect right in the middle of the Bloomington Central Station site on the right-hand side of the image. If you turn to the third page, this page represents the master plan for the site as it sits today. So if you look on the upper right-hand corner of the page, you can see that the entire right-hand side of the site is really oriented toward future housing. The left-hand side of the site is oriented toward future corporate office. And the center of the site is a central park with a hotel located on the north side. In all, it's approximately $1 billion of future private investment that more than likely will happen over a 25-year cycle of time. If you turn to the next page, this is an aerial photo of the site today, and it really represents what this opportunity is. Today, if you look down at this aerial photo, you'll see Health Partners, the corporate headquarters for Health Partners, right in the middle of the site. The transit station is located right in front of Health Partners. And again, today, the site has been developed. It's a suburban campus. With all of the public infrastructure and highways and train lines and airports and the mall and the wildlife refuge, this is an opportunity to develop this site in more density with more people living and working in this area. You can turn the page and bring it to closure. The opportunity through this bill to rebalance our TIF district allows us to retain construction jobs and permanent jobs totaling over 10,000 employees, jobs, drive private investment for over $1 billion, and continue to leverage the existing public infrastructure so we can build densely in this South Loop District. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fay. Mr. McConnell, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, Dan McConnell. I'm the business manager of the Minneapolis Building and Construction Trade Council. On behalf of my 14,000 members, I'm here to voice our strong support for this bill. As you know, we've had a long-standing partnership with the Mall of America, and we've had a similar partnership with McGough Construction going back many years. Also, on a personal note, I used to bike across to the bridge so I'm very excited. I never watched the birds, but I was too busy biking, so very excited about that as well. So I'd like to also bring to your attention something you may not be aware of, that's that the affiliate unions of my council have not just come here and ask for money, we've also put our money where our mouth is. We've invested approximately $70 million in both projects, and we believe that investment in these projects is necessary to maintain the mall and global competitiveness. The vibrancy of the mall. We would requestfully respect this committee to pass this bill.
Thank you, Mr. McConnell. Mr. Makarios, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee members, my name is Kyle Makarios. I'm the Director of Government Affairs for the Carpenters Union here in Minnesota, and I am very pleased to appear in front of this committee once again to support these great projects in this bill and to thank Representative Lincheski for carrying this bill. Mall of America not only has been a great was a great project for those members in 1986 through 1990 that got to build it, but the fact is Mall of America is a place that employs union carpenters every single day since they opened originally. In fact, since opening, Mall of America has averaged $30 million in construction every year since 1990. It is a place where there are union carpenters working on that facility every single day. It's been a continuous source of jobs and a great corporate partner. Similarly, McGough Companies is the largest union contractor in the state, provides more work hours to union members than any other contractor. These are fantastic partners of our union. They employ many hundreds and thousands of our members, and we are delighted to fully support this bill and to have an opportunity. These projects, when they move forward, will be career-making projects for our members. These are projects that will define construction workers' careers as they work on them for years at a time. So glad to be here, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Makarios. Representative Lincheski, any other testifiers?
No, that's it. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify on House File 208?
Mr. Chair, while Mr. Lunenberg's coming up, I should say there are a lot of resource people on all these projects here who are available for questions if the committee has any.
Excellent. Mr. Lunenberg, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, committee members, Representative Lincheski, my name is Wade Lunenberg. I'm the Secretary-Treasurer of Unite Here Local 17 and also the Secretary-Treasurer of the Minnesota State Council of Unite Here Unions. We represent 5,000 members here in the Twin Cities in hotels, restaurants, sports venues, convention centers. Also, we have 1,400 people on the field at MSP Airport and also in cafeterias. Our work at Unite Here is to ensure that workers have jobs with fair working conditions and fair pay for the work they do. While our jobs may appear easy, the work required of the people in these jobs is often physically demanding. For instance, nationally, hotel housekeeping jobs have a very high rate of worker injury. So Unite Here works with employers to ensure that workplace standards are met and that the pay is commensurate to the work done. Unite Here is interested in this legislation because of the significant public investment that will leverage private investment along the light rail line. Both the Mall of America property and especially Bloomington Central Station have been planned and discussed in Bloomington for over a decade. Our union has been directly involved in the discussions over this time. This is a very highly developable piece of property, and we're pleased to see it move forward. In the past, when the state has made an investment in private development that involves the creation of hospitality jobs, the state has made sure that there will not be economic disruption to project construction or operations afterwards. It's done this by ensuring that a labor peace agreement is in part of the development before going forward with the public subsidy. Labor peace agreements are essentially a contract between property developers or operators and the union, which lays out an orderly process by which workers can learn about labor unions and choose whether or not if they want to join. The agreement prevents the union from staging pickets or economic boycotts that can disrupt construction or operations. And the agreement requires management to remain neutral in the conversation between the union and the workers. These agreements are commonplace in our industry, with every major hotel chain across the country being signatory. Public bodies across the country, including the state of Minnesota, have found these agreements useful to ensure that plans for development and construction go forward in an orderly fashion. In fact, the city of Minneapolis has a labor peace ordinance in place. The city of Minneapolis refuses to invest in hospitality projects unless there is a significant agreement between the union and the developer. We've signed agreements with the Minnesota Twins, the Vikings, the city of St. Paul for the XL Arena, and the St. Paul Saints, the Metropolitan Airports Commission at MSP, and numerous hotel projects, including the new Radisson Blue that will open shortly at the Mall of America. However, when developers of projects with state or local funding have declined to have an agreement, state or local entities have added labor peace as a condition of the public subsidy. In 2008, as part of the round of Mall of America public subsidy, the legislature included a labor peace requirement that facilitated the agreement that we ultimately reached on the Radisson Blue at the MOA. For those members who voted in favor of that tax bill, you've already voted for labor peace. I'm disappointed to have to share with you that we do not have an agreement with the developers or operators at the BCS site. Without a labor peace agreement in place, once the construction is finished and the hotel is up and running, the state's proprietary interest and the public's investment at BCS could be compromised. There could be a labor dispute at the site. The operator can prevent workers from learning about the union, including access and communications, despite millions of dollars in public subsidies at the site. And they can intimidate or fire workers who ask for union membership to ensure fair wages, better working conditions, or health care benefits. Our preference is to get a private agreement, but barring that outcome, we ask that you add labor peace on par with the 2008 law to this bill as well. So I thank you for your time.
Thank you, Mr. Lunenberg.
I have a brief handout.
If the pages would please assist with that. Ms. Nauman. I thought I saw you get up to speak.
Mr. Chair and members, my name is Patricia Nauman. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities. We are an organization that represents cities throughout the seven-county metropolitan region. I'll be very brief today, and I have spoken to Representative Lincheski. We just have some concerns with one provision of the bill. I'm not here to speak against the bill itself, but I am here to speak to the provision that allows the taxes from the Mall of America TIF districts in this bill to be exempt from the fiscal disparities pool, which does go against a longstanding Metro Cities policy that opposes any diversion from the fiscal disparities pool for any specific programs or purposes. So merely here to express that concern, and I thank you for your time today.
Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 208? Ma'am, welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Michelle Foster. I'm president of Foster Real Estate Advisory Services, and I am a longtime board member of NIOP Minnesota. I am also a member of the NIOP Task Force on Fiscal Disparities, and I'm here to represent NIOP, the Commercial Real Estate Development Association, which represents developers, owners, and managers of commercial real estate, and the thousands of businesses who are tenants in commercial and industrial buildings that our members own and manage. I am here also to testify on Section 2 of the bill, which specifically proposes changes to the fiscal disparities program. As I'm sure you are all aware, that when the program was initiated, it was established to be a tax-based sharing program. It was not intended to be a direct funding program for projects or programs. As the value of the metropolitan area tax base has increased, there have increasingly been proposals and projects that have talked about taking part of their fiscal disparities contribution in order to support those programs and projects, and that is where our members have become increasingly concerned about that trend and about this specific proposal. Some of these past proposals, had they passed, would have increased property taxes on commercial and industrial properties. They would also have set the precedent of moving the fiscal disparities program towards particular projects and programs and moving it away from its original purposes, which was tax-based sharing. The difference between the fiscal disparities program and existing development subsidy programs is that specific development subsidy programs generally require an economic analysis establishing the need for the subsidy, satisfaction of a but-for test, specific time limits for the subsidy, and execution of a typical development agreement with the typical kinds of terms and conditions that are in those development contracts. Because of the total reliance on the commercial and industrial property tax base for fiscal disparities, our members have a legitimate interest and concern about any changes to this particular program. We feel that converting the program into a specific development subsidy mechanism for public or private projects sets a precedent that we are not comfortable with and which we feel will open the conversation for programs and projects in the future to make similar kinds of requests. We also feel that commercial and industrial properties should not bear the burden of financing public or private programs or projects by changing the fiscal disparities program. So our position on these proposed legislative changes are as follows. Number one, NIOP Minnesota favors maintaining the fiscal disparities program as it currently stands without change and allow the program to continue to operate as it was originally passed into law. Secondly, NIOP Minnesota opposes any use of the fiscal disparity program as a funding mechanism for subsidizing local or regional projects, private or public. And third, NIOP Minnesota opposes any and all diversions of resources from the fiscal disparities program, which would have the effect of requiring existing business property taxpayers to subsidize the costs of competing private developments. With that, we remain committed to being involved in the any conversations in the future about changes to the fiscal disparities program.
Thank you, Ms. Foster. Anyone else wishing to testify regarding House File 208? Gentlemen, please come to the table. Identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Brian Bell, and I am a board member of the Citizens League, and I'm also the co-chair of its Policy Advisory Committee.
Mr. Bell, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, Representatives, Representative Lancheski, I'm here on behalf of the Citizens League to express our opposition to Section 2 of House File 208, exempting the Mall of America's expansion from the fiscal disparities pool. Fiscal disparities, along with the Metropolitan Government Council, set the Twin Cities governance apart from its peers. By sharing a portion of commercial and industrial property tax base across the region, the program facilitates a more cohesive approach to regional finance. The pre-fiscal disparities fights to attract property tax base were not simply zero-sum, but negative-sum. This is because tying local government's fate to property taxes resulted in resistance to parks and low-income housing and the encouragement of urban sprawl. Fiscal disparities was designed to minimize these perverse incentives. In its endeavors, fiscal disparities takes a calculated approach. The program excludes all pre-1971 property tax base and 40% of new commercial and industrial property tax. Additionally, fiscal disparities excludes all residential properties to ensure that local residents have the political leverage to influence the use of their property tax dollars. The program has been successful in its goals. For example, the Twin Cities park system is second to none for urban parks and recreation in the country. However, the program has not been free from attempts by local governments to guard their tax base from the regional pool. Among the programs that frequently run directly counter to the goals of fiscal disparities is tax increment financing. TIF's non-transparent process facilitates that program's subsidization of new businesses at the expense of other private sector competitors. Unlike TIF, fiscal disparities is not meant to serve as a pool for specific projects. Rather, fiscal disparities has been seen as a stable source of revenue for most local governments that participate in the program. In that vein, fiscal disparities is important in limiting the region's reliance on local government aid, a revenue source that has proved to be particularly sensitive to changes in state politics. The loophole created by Section 2 of House File 208 can only be described as a perversion of the very purpose of fiscal disparities and an outlier in the program's 40-year history. The incentives that provided the impetus for Section 2 are the same factors fiscal disparities was fashioned to avoid. Further, not only does Section 2 divert money from the regional pool, it uses the diverted money for a public subsidy directed at a private enterprise. Section 2 excludes tax base that should be in the fiscal disparities pool and uses it to subsidize the project, forcing similar metro area businesses to subsidize their competition with little accountability. This legislation opens the door for future exceptions that undermine two key characteristics of fiscal disparities, its breadth and inclusiveness. For these reasons, the Citizens League opposes Section 2 of House File 208.
Thank you, Mr. Bell. Sir, please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Bob DeBoer from the Citizens League. I am here just to reiterate what Mr. Bell has said, Chair Dabney, members of the committee. I think the most important thing to think about here when you take the fiscal disparities contribution and you put it into a TIF district, over the decades that fiscal disparities has been around, the goals of trying to get communities not to compete over tax base, TIF has been running all those decades fighting against it. And now to actually use that tax base to go right into subsidizing competitors, so other types of businesses in the metro area, by use of this regional pool, are now going to be forced to subsidize their competitor. I think that is what we're really concerned about in the precedent here. We don't think it's a good one. We understand this is a very large and important project, and that's how it gets on the table. But we're very concerned about the kind of precedent that it would set. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. DeBoer. Is there anyone else in the audience who wishes to testify regarding House File 208? With that, questions from members. Mr. Faber, would you please return to the table? I lost track of where you went, but there you are. Mr. Faber, on your handout, you project the construction of a 300-room corporate hotel. What's a corporate hotel?
It is a hotel that includes it's a hotel that includes 300 rooms with conferencing space, meeting space, a restaurant, a full-service-oriented hotel.
Mr. Fable, how is that different from convention center?
Mr. Chair, members, the size and the scale of the conferencing space is probably the significant difference between a convention space and the opportunities that a convention space hotel could have compared to the size and the scale of a typical corporate-type hotel with maybe only our largest room may be 8,000 square feet. A convention's largest room may be 30 or 40,000 square feet.
Mr. Fable, how does that contrast with the Radisson Blue development that will be opening next month, I believe, is the testimony?
I'm not familiar with the size and the scale of the conferencing space at the Radisson Blue. It's a much larger hotel. It's a 500-room hotel compared to our 300-room hotel. But I don't know much about their conferencing space.
Okay. Thank you very much. Representative Loeffler, thank you for your patience, ma'am.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And
thank you, Mr. Fick.
You know, I think any community would be glad to have a lot of amenities, new parks, four light rail stations. It's pretty exciting if you represent Bloomington. But I have a question about for the developers, since you may not be here when we talk about the tax policy again, which could talk about a lot of debate, and that is the projection for all the additional square footage of office space, and who is going to occupy that office space, and what kind of vision do you have for where they're going to come from? Because you're asking the entire metro area to contribute to developing 2.5 million square feet of offices scattered amongst, I think, six buildings. And if those offices are filled with people who are taken from downtown St. Paul and Eden Prairie and downtown Minneapolis and Brooklyn Park and Brooklyn Center, then we've not only lost in terms of the tax base sharing, but we also have declining tax base with vacant buildings, which quickly shows up in the tax base of those properties. So can you tell me a little bit more about how you envision the marketplace absorbing this kind of amount of square footage, and what kind of tenants have you pre-aligned that have expressed an interest?
Mr. Fable, you're back.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. The scale of the project is correct. It's 2 million square feet of additional corporate office. That's approximately, you know, 5 to 6 additional buildings, again, contemplated to be built over 25 years. Primarily, the type of interest that we see expressed for our site are companies that value the adjacency to the airport, adjacency to the 494 highway system, as well as the natural amenities of the wildlife refuge. The size and scale of the project that we need to be able to kick off the building would be in that 200 to 300,000 square foot size, very large users that would need to kick off a building. Those types of users that are that size are often growing companies that are either merging two businesses to one, or their existing real estate is spread out into 5 different buildings across the region, and they need to eventually converge into one location. As we move forward in trying to market the site, we're working with Greater MSP and other companies to market to businesses that are outside of the Twin City area, try to bring them to the Twin Cities area to be adjacent to the airport, and just to leverage those existing amenities, and just really satisfy the organic growth and success of Minnesota businesses to locate at our site.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Mr. Fable. I think, you know, you're describing the kind of businesses that every community wants to retain. We heard earlier from 3M, which started in St. Paul. And then when they got bigger and needed to consolidate and expand, they left that community and left them with a redevelopment issue. I think we can, there's many, many stories of that. And, you know, that's a concern for me in terms of, you know, how do we take away the tax base that's shared between these communities? And I've always heard that fiscal disparities was designed so that communities would benefit from the growth of the region, not that it would be peeled off to communities that are already benefiting from substantial public improvements in terms of light rail, the airport, you know, other things that make this successful that were paid for with public dollars. And so I have a real concern about, you know, the regional impact of this and how it is being staged. The other question I have, and this is maybe for Representative Lancheski or the city official, Mr. Red Lake, is that right? Sorry. And that is the allowing the existing TIF district to expire so that the city of Bloomington gets its tax base back at the same time it really wants the state and the region to pay for the amenities related to this. And I'm just wondering if what the local contribution is into this major effort.
And if I may, we do have little time left and a number of members who are going to ask.
Mr. Chair.
Who are on the list for questions.
Since that's on the financing and we'll have other time to discuss that, I'll be glad to defer to people who want to ask questions for the developers and others who are here today.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Representative Lancheski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know if you're trying to get that last bill in, but if I may just...
Certainly.
And I don't know how you intend to handle this, but I do want to comment a little bit on a few of the things that have been stated, and that is, so, you know, what Representative Loeffler is talking about, Representative Loeffler and Representative Dabney, you should both know that your city actually gets much harder under a TIF proposal for the mall than an FD proposal. So just know that, because you're both in Hennepin, and for all the Hennepin legislators, no matter how you think through how to finance this, you're in. So what's happened, members, is Mall 1 required that all the folks in Hennepin and the people of Bloomington at a much higher rate, because it's a city tax too, build the first one. FD says it's a metro-wide approach. So if you represent Hennepin right now, just know that FD is probably a little better for you. But that's just a subset of the people in the room here. So I do want to comment a little bit on the fiscal disparities.
components. And members, you know, people often say, and you heard this, that, you know, we shouldn't start this precedent. And I actually am mostly with them and have supported that line of reasoning. But this legislature, bipartisanly, both the House, Senate, both parties, and the governor and others continue to want to see these projects proceed. And so it seems fair to me that if that's how people feel, that folks should have a little skin in the game. My community has been the number one contributor to fiscal disparities since the program's inception. And everyone else is benefiting from that. You're also benefiting from the existence of the mall because it pays state taxes, not local taxes. So if folks don't want these proposals, then, you know, I think people need to be honest and not try to keep dumping it down on the city that's already done the first round. So I will just tell you on the precedence issue, you know, there is precedence, Mr. Chair, for fiscal disparities. In fact, the first mall was built with fiscal disparities. It was built with TIF from the people of Hennepin and Bloomington, and the roads were built through fiscal disparities. But the trick there was the legislature decided to make Bloomington pay it back in a loan form, and that's what Bloomington's doing. So the business community paid the debt for the fiscal disparities, and Bloomington residents are paying back that loan to the pool. And so if you're the city of St. Paul or someone else, you're benefiting from that payback too. So kind of at all fronts, you should know that it's been a very unfair approach. And if folks want to continue this, we're going to have to get a little more into a little more sharing. But there have been precedents. Mall 1. The pre-1979 TIF districts members, what happened is these cities all got the same sort of exemption from fiscal disparities as it relates to TIF law. The old TIF districts, they were changed at one point, but at that moment that they were changed, the legislature decided, we're going to let all these TIF districts not pay into FD for 30 years. And so here's just a few of the cities that got to do that. Minneapolis, St. Paul, Golden Valley, St. Louis Park, South St. Paul, Shakopee, Chanhaskin, Hopkins, Columbia Heights, Edina, Robbinsdale, Waconia, Minnetonka, Hastings, Rosemont, Farmington, Fridley, Wayzata. That's a few. I can give you the buildings that of all these folks who didn't have to pay into fiscal disparities as a result of how the TIF law worked. And so finally that clocked out, and that's finally stopped. But, you know, members should also know that South St. Paul, for example, had a 20-year exemption to not have to pay fiscal disparities for anything. 20 years. The Minneapolis Airport doesn't have to. Holman Field doesn't have to. And then we have Metropolitan Livable Communities, which is benefiting a lot of folks in this room. And how is that funded? Once Mall 1 clocked off, that new tax that went on top of the fiscal disparities pool to make up for the loss of what was happening with Mall 1, that was never turned back off. The business community didn't get a tax cut for that. That tax stayed on, and some of the testifiers are here, not these two, but prior ones, were promoters of Metropolitan Livable Communities, and it took that share of the pool and said, we're going to have Metropolitan Livable Communities now. We're going to subsidize that across the metro. So, you know, we don't have the time, but if people want to get into all the nuance and detail, I think I can walk many people through how there is precedent and how people are benefiting from this situation. So now we have the city that, again, has been the biggest contributor. I'm coming forward, not liking any of these subsidies, saying if folks want to proceed, then I think this is a reasonable way to do it. It's passed the House and the Senate a few times, and it's been very bipartisan in its approach, and as we go forward in the omnibus tax bill, we'll have to continue to consider this, but I think it's there's a lot of precedent. This is a regional jobs plan. It's a regional development area that has, you know, as was stated by Representative Davids, will have the most jobs of any bill that I think anyone can move forward this year. And we certainly know where the tax receipts from these projects are going, and they're going to the state, not to the local community, because they are in TIF districts. So, Mr. Chair, I appreciate you letting me respond to some of what's been said, and I know there's a lot more detailed work on this bill and, you know, as we go on in the committee.
Thank you, Chair Lincheski. Members, I suspect that if you have questions for the author, there'll be another chance to ask those. Are there any members who are already on the list, Representative Anzel, Lesh, Earhart, and Loon, who have questions for testifiers who do not hang around this place on a regular basis? Representative Loon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just one quick question, and I think for perhaps one of the testifiers on the development of office space as part of that project around Bloomington. Are there studies that you have conducted on the need for that type of that amount of commercial of office space and commercial real estate in the metro area? Are we projecting a shortage? And do you know what the occupancy rate is currently for overall for?
Mr. Fable.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, members, again, the concept for the project is to provide an opportunity for corporations to relocate their facilities or to start their facilities on this site over a 25-year period. So this is not intended to be something that's going to generate a tremendous amount of supply today. That being said, there are two large corporations that are considering 300,000 square foot office buildings today for our site that we're considering to start construction after this bill passes in 2014. So there are real opportunities that are of the size of the buildings that we were proposing that are already considering this site. And some are just organic growth from the adjacent area and not relocations from other communities into this community. You know, another component, just to address, I think, some other concerns that we heard last year were the office buildings that we're proposing to build, those buildings are not being subsidized to lower the rent to be more competitive than adjacent neighboring communities. So the idea that we're trying to generate a project that has a cheaper rent than an adjacent city or community, that's not the case of what we're trying to do on the project. We're trying to create pad-ready sites for market rent for competing in the general market in the South Metro.
Representative Loon.
Thank you. And just to clarify, I think I heard you say that a couple of the large companies perhaps looking to grow or consolidate, they are not currently in the metro area. Did I hear that correctly?
Mr. Fable.
Mr. Chair, members, no, to clarify, the groups that we're looking at are growing organically in the Twin City areas today.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Pepin, last question, 2 seconds, as promised.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is just a comment for Chair Lencheski. Representative Lencheski, you've said several times that Bloomington pays the most in fiscal disparities, and I'd just like to clarify, I believe Rogers pays the most per capita, and since I represent Rogers, I just wanted to point that out.
All right, duking out metrics.
Mr. Chair, she's absolutely right. However, everybody who likes the money from the fiscal disparities pool, and most folks are a recipient, they want the money, and while it is true on a per capita, as far as the sheer money, there's nobody coming close to Bloomington as far as how many millions are thrown into the pot every year. So per capita versus actual dollars.
All right. Right. With that, Representative Lencheski moves that House File 208 be held over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill. Members, we do have one more bill on the agenda. I apologize for that. Representative Lohmer, I know that you've been patient and that you have a testifier. If you would like to come forward, how quickly do you think you can do your bill, or would you like to have it rescheduled? We have two other 3 minutes. We're clocking you.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to move Representative Lohmer's bill.
Representative Lencheski moves that House File 608, thank you, members, be before the committee for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. How quickly can you talk?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will try. And members of the Tax Committee, House File 608 is an extension of the 2010 TIF provision of the Jobs Bill. This bill would allow the city of Stillwater to improve certain buildings in the city, thus increasing their tax base. So there are other cities I know that are stepping forward and saying they would like this extension as well. This idea was brought to me not as a general request, but for a project in the future, but because there is a specific project in my district that could go forward should this be extended. And I'd also like to say that this is in consultation with the mayor of Stillwater, who is here with me to testify, as well as Mr. Dick Schoberg, who will have more information on the project. I just want to say really quickly, too, that this is supported by the League of Minnesota Cities and Metro Cities. So
great.
I'll just let these
who first?
Hi, Ken.
Mr. Brick. Mayor, please identify yourself for the record and proceed. And my apologies and thank you for your patience, sir.
I'll speak very quickly. I'm Ken Horisky, the mayor of the city of Stillwater. In the past, we've used previous extensions rather successfully to help renovate some of the facades in our buildings downtown. Many of our buildings go back to the time of statehood and even predate statehood. And it's been an important tool that's allowed us to rehab up to 7 facades just last year. And without this source of funding, these buildings wouldn't have had the rehab going on. Furthermore, you know, this isn't a new tax. We're just asking for dollars that we already have that are sitting in TIF districts that have expired to be pooled together and to be used for this important function. And actually, he will testify as to what we're actually hoping, the specific project we're hoping to do.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Imagine if you had TIFed them at the time of statehood. Mr. Schoberg.
Mr. Chairman, representatives, Representative Lohmann, I'm here today to speak in support of House File 608. My name is Dick Schobert, and I'm one of the 10 families residing in the Steepletown condominiums in Stillwater. Also here today is Denise Brown, another of the owners of the condominiums. We are all proud of our historic building, which was built as a church in 1884. This building is part of the fabric of Stillwater's historic appeal as a great place to live and visit. It was showcased on the covers of the Stillwater Chamber of Commerce's 2009 and 2011 visitors' guides. So the town thinks highly of it. House File 608 is a win-win-win for our community. It would help revitalize a building in the historic downtown. It would provide work for Minnesota contractors, and it would encourage pride of ownership with no downside to the state of Minnesota or the city. In this particular situation, the passage of this bill will allow the city of Stillwater to loan monies for the exterior restoration and tuck pointing of the facade of this building in a historically correct manner. The principal and interest would be added as an assessment to each homeowner's property taxes until the loan is repaid. Therefore, I respectfully ask for your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience wanting to testify regarding House File 608? Perfect. Representative Lohmann, are questions for the audience or from members? Representative Lohmann, thank you. Any closing comments?
Thank you very much for your allowing us to do this today. I really, really appreciate it, and I won't say any more except please support this Bill 608. Thank you.
Next time when you can stay longer. With that, the chair renews his motion that House File 608 be held over for possible inclusion in omnibus bill. Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to set the record straight, I believe 3M, that great Minnesota company that was alluded to earlier, actually started in a garage in Two Harbors, on the shore of Lake Superior, within a stone's throw of a taconite plant.
Does 3M currently pay the taconite taxes on their headquarters in Maplewood? All right. With that, Representative Lincheski moves acceptance of the minutes of the February 20th meeting. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Motion prevails, and Representative Benson moves the minutes of the February 21st meeting. Thank you, Representative Benson. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. With that, the Committee on Taxes is adjourned. With that, the Division on Property and Local Taxes is adjourned. The Property Tax Division will reconvene at 4 p.m. Thank you, members.
Thank you.